In the previous session, we start to speak about the durability and discussed about the parameters influence on the durability. And then we noticed that the main important parameters when we speak about the durability of the structure is deterioration of concrete structure. And we noticed that we have a different type of the deterioration and different mechanism. And they start to speak about the frost damage. And also, we continue to introduce the theory, hydraulic pressure theory, which could describe well behavior of the frost air in the or freezed air in the concrete. So we are going to continue with the frost damage. If you probably many of you are familiar with this table, that in this table we could see that we have a different type of the frost level, classified level, and for each level, I'm not go through this, just quickly introduce that. After understanding the level of the damaged structure, then we can go through the another table, and in this table you could see the durability level. So based on the classification of the environmental condition and level of the freezing problem, then we can select the durability classification. So you can see for frost damage level 1 and 2 and 3, 4, we are here. So, and by this durability level, we could select different cover size. So we are not going to continue with this, just quickly review this. Probably you are familiar with this table. And also we mentioned that when we speak about the frost damage, the one of the best way to control the effect of the frost damage in the structure is adding the air bubble. And this graph show that the content of the air bubble as a percentage in the horizontal axis, and also here we have a durability factor. You could see that if the air bubble is under 2%, the effect of that is not too much. But when it's more than 4%, then it's have a lot influence on the durability. So this is show the importance of the adding the bubble. But we should at the same time be careful that adding the bubble to the structure could reduce the compressive strength, as we discussed in the previous session. So this is the frost. And the other deterioration mechanism is overloading. It's a physical problem for the structure. Just quickly, that if we have an overloaded structure, sometimes, for example, we have a truck with double weight on the road. So, and also we have some other type of the overloading in the structure. The main influence on the, especially in the bridge, is increasing the deflection of the bridge span and then creating the crack in the structure, usually flexural crack. And then sometimes also we have a shear crack due to the adding the load, overloading the structure. And in this picture you can see the huge crack appeared here due to the overloading the structure. So controlling the overloading is not difficult, and I don't think we have such kind of problem too much in Norway. The other parameters or damage type is abrasion. When the concrete is repeatedly stuck by particle, a very hard particle in the surface, then it could remove and injure the surface of the concrete, and then we name it the abrasion. And to control the abrasion, we should focus on two parameters, two important parameters. One of them is the compressive strength of the concrete. If you are going to control this, then you have to increase the compressive strength of the concrete. And then how to increase the compressive strength, it depends on the mixed design of the concrete. And the other thing is use the high quality aggregate, because the aggregate play important role in the abrasion problem. So if we could have a good quality and high quality aggregate, then we could control it better. Leaching. The dissolution of the calcium hydroxide in the concrete, if you see that we have a calcium hydroxide, And when it's react in the concrete and the calcium is free, and then calcium go through the concrete and reach the surface of the concrete. And then we can see that in the surface, usually if there are CO2 in the air, they can react with each other and produce CaCO3 or limestone. So this limestone create a wide surface in the concrete. So we have a wide surface in the concrete, and if you look at the, and also you should, it's good to know that if you have a high quality concrete, usually leaching doesn't have a negative influence on that. But sometimes, especially when the concrete quality is not good, maybe leaching could increase the porosity in the and make the concrete more porous in the structures in the concrete. And here you can see two pictures of the leaching and this limestone in the surface of the concrete. It's a white area in the surface of the concrete, a white layer in the surface of the concrete. So sulfate is the another deterioration mechanism we are going to speak about. That usually we in the soil we have gypsum and other sulfate. So if the concrete be in contact with the soil, we have lots of concrete structure which are in contact with the soil, then probably we should be think about the sulfate attack in the concrete structure. And also another source of the sulfate is industrial wastewater. Sulfate could spoil the surface, the cover of the concrete. How, we are going to see in the next slide. We have a calcium hydroxide in the concrete, if you look at this formula here. And then this one start to react with the sulfate in the concrete and produce the gypsum. Gypsum increase the volume around 8%. And this gypsum again start to react with the hydrate C3A. Pay attention that here is hydrate C3A. It means that the first product of the hydration is finished, and then it could react with the hydrate C3A and then produce the ettringite. This ettringite is delay ettringite, because we already have ettringite in the concrete, in the cement paste, but sulfide attack produced the delayed ettringite, and this ettringite could increase the volume up to 200% and create a crack and spall of the concrete cover. So then the concept is not difficult. So the calcium react with the sulfate and produce gypsum react with C3A, and this is the reason. If you remember, we said that to control the sulfate attack, we should reduce the amount of the C3A in the cement, if you remember from the last session. And the other things is the source of the sulfate, as I said, it could be a groundwater or industrial structure, and also sewage. Yep. So the question is, the other things it's good to know about the sulfate is sulfate usually could reduce the bond between the concrete and the rebar, because of this increasing the volume, and the concrete and rebar, there is not good attachment between the concrete and rebar, and sulfate could reduce the band. But the question is how to control the sulfate. So the first one is using the cement which has low C3A, less than 3% volume percentage. And we already discussed this, why this is good or how to control this. And the quality of concrete is important. When we use the low cement, low water cement ratio, then we have more dense concrete, and then the sulfate cannot easily go through the concrete. And use the air entrainment. The reason of adding the air to the concrete is to control the increasing the volume. And also pozzolan are fine, has a fine material and particle, and then reduce the pores in the structures and permeability of the structure. And alkali-silica reaction. You're almost familiar with this reaction, but if we have an aggregate containing the silica and then it starts to react with alkali, sodium and potassium in the concrete, and then produce the expansion in the concrete. But this is good to know that this process is very slow, and it takes sometimes 15, 20, and 30 years to appear in the structures. But you can see that the shape of the crack is kind of map crack when we have an alkali-silica reaction. So the summary of the reaction is like this: silica on the surface of the aggregate dissolve and react with the alkali in the pore solutions, so make an alkali-silica gel, and this gel, when we have a moisture, start to react and expand. But one thing is good to know about the type of the crack. When we have a map crack in the structures, usually the crack would like to follow the reinforcement. So if we have a net of reinforcement, we can see the crack just follow the reinforcement. But sometimes when we have a drying shrinkage, also we can see the map crack on the surface of the structure. But how to distinguish this is the drying shrinkage, this is the alkali-silica reaction? The time could help us, because the drying shrinkage appear in the first hours and days, but alkali-silica reaction is the very long process, and after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you will see that kind of the crack. So it depends on the age of the structure, then you can consider which type of the problem you have. So which factor affecting and influencing on the ASR? The factor which influence on the ASR, the first one is amount of the alkali. So we know that to control and to avoid the, according to the code, to avoid the alkali-silica reaction, we have to control the amount of the equivalent sodium and the equivalent nitrate on the concrete, and it should be lower 3 kilogram per cubic meters. The other things is we should not use the active aggregate. We should try to use the large amount of the active aggregate, and if you are going to control this. But if it's reactive aggregate and if the alkali content is over 2 kilograms per cubic meters, then it's to make a problem. And then for having the ASR, the other things is relative humidity. If relative humidity is over 80%, then this is very favorable for having the ASR problem. So these three show us when we could have this problem in the structures. But how to, when we are going to make a new structure, how to control and avoid having this kind of the problem? First of all, is the control of the cement. So in the cement, the amount of the equivalent sodium should be equivalent NO2O should be less than 0.6%, and then it's exactly equal to this in the concrete. And also we can reduce the amount of the cement by replacing with the admixture, or for example some pozzolanic material. And the other thing is use non-reactive aggregate, which we already discussed, and use the pozzolan, increase the amount of the pozzolan in the structure. So by this strategy and by this method, we can control the alkali-silica reaction in the concrete. So the other things is we are going to speak about that is corrosion. Before starting to speak about the corrosion, we should know that there is a layer around the rebar. We name it passive layer. What is the passive layer? When we speak about the corrosion, we know that in the steel embedded in the hydrant cement paste, there is a layer, oxide layer around the rebar, which protect the rebar from the concrete. So from the corrosion, actually. So this is the reason when we have a rebar in the concrete, and also there is a wet in the concrete, we don't have any corrosion. As much as we have this passive layer, oxide layer around the rebar, there is no problem on that. But if we lose this passive layer, or if we damage this passive layer, then the corrosion could start. So the first step of starting corrosion is removing the passive layer. So if we reduce the pH in the structures, then the passive layer could be injured. Yeah. So let's start with chloride corrosion. Chloride corrosion, or chloride penetrate to the concrete and start to reach the rebar. After reaching the rebar, it could concentrate in one point and start to have a different type of the reaction. Anodic reaction and cathodic reaction. What is the anodic reaction and what is the cathodic reaction? So, if we want to describe the anodic reaction is oxidation of iron. We have iron here, and this iron start to release the electrode, and then we have a dissolved iron in the surface of the rebar. So this reaction, when the layer here is protective layer here is injured and removed, then iron start to we have oxidation of the iron, and then in this case we have an electron in the rebar, and also in the surface of the rebar we have dissolved iron, and also we have a cathodic reaction, which liberated the electron from the oxidation of iron. So here the cathodic reaction, you can see here that the oxygen and water and that electron which is released, and then in the surface of the concrete we have hydroxide. So the oxygen with moisture, water, and the electron which comes from here react together and released and liberate the hydroxide. This hydroxide and this dissolved iron could react to each other, and then they react to each other. On the other hand, we could say that the algebraic sum of these two reactions make the total reaction. So the total corrosion reaction at the end, we have FeOH2 here, which is the dust, which you can see here. So this dust could create a crack on the concrete around the rebar. So when we speak, just as a summary, when we speak about the corrosion in the concrete structure on the rebar chloride corrosion, then we have two different type of the reaction: anodic reaction, cathodic reaction. In the anodic reaction, we have dissolved iron and electron. In the cathodic reaction, we use this electron here, with oxygen and water, then we have hydroxide. The hydroxide react with the dissolved iron and then produce the solid material, which you can see when we have a some material around the corroded rebar. This is the FeOH2. And this try to increase the volume and create the crack around that. But when we focused on the process of the corrosion, we can divide the corrosion process in two parts. The first part is initial period. Let me see, I can write it here or not. No, the first part is initial period. You can see here. Maybe I should use this. Yeah, here. We have a initial period, which means that chloride start to go through the concrete, but it doesn't reach the rebar, and we have a steel passive layer around the rebar. And after that, we have a propagation period. It means that the corrosion is start. So it depends. The initial period could take some months, some year. It depends on the quality of the structures, the cover, the environmental condition, and several parameters. But after that, the corrosion actually starts from this point. And you can see that here is a depassivation of the reinforcement, point one. And it's continue, and then we have a formation of the crack, and then at the end we have a spalling of the cover. And at the end of that, we have collapse of the structure. So this is important to know that for us, increasing the initiation period is important. So this is our favorable situation, that as much as we can, we could increase the initiation period. But also we should think about the economical situation. Yeah. So, one of the main influence of the corrosion on the structure is cross-section reduction. So, when we speak and when we try to understand the behavior of the corroded structure, The one thing is we should focus on that is the cross-section loose. If I calculate the capacity of the cross-section with the specific amount of the rebar, and after corrosion, it starts to reduce the cross-section of the rebar. Then if I recalculate the capacity of the, for example, beam, the capacity would be different because I have a smaller rebar. Some part of the rebar is already removed. So then I should consider another diameter for the reinforcement. And this diameter is original diameters minus the corroded part. And this unit is uniform because we simplified this. It's not always uniform corrosion around the river. Some part is higher, some part is different. But as a simplified method, sometimes we can use this and say that, okay, it's just a smaller diameters, or same rebar with the smaller diameters. But sometimes you can see we have a big pit in the structure. If you look, if you see that here, if you have a concentration of the corrosion, and it start to go deep and deep and deep in a specific point, which we name it localized corrosion. And what do you think? If we have a localized corrosion, can we assume that the diameter is like this? Probably no, because if we apply the tensile load to the rebar, then it's quickly disrupted from here. even though we have no corrosion in this area, because we have a very, very few cross section here. If you look at this figure, you can see what I mean. Here is a pitting, the location of the pitting corrosion you can see in different rebar. So the chloride just focused on one specific point and start to reduce the cross section. And sometimes this cross section lose is over 50% or 60%. And then this is the very critical situation. Because if you consider, if it's more than 60%, then you have lost a lot of capacity of your rebar. Then you have to recalculate or maybe repair your structure. This is very interesting. Here we have a rebar. This is the length of the rebar. And you could see here that in this case, from 0 to 5,000 millimeter or 6,000 millimeters, it's 6 meter rebar. And this is the amount of the cross section due to the corrosion. You could see that it's completely different. And sometimes that assumption that it's completely identical and uniform could be wrong, because maybe the average cross section rule here is 10%. And if I consider the 10% cross section lose, then it's not correct, because in several places I have around 50% cross section lose. So we should be careful if we are going to use the average cross section lose to recalculate the capacity of the structure. And even for two different rebar is different. For front rebar or for back rebar, the distribution of the corrosion is different. Did you get what I want to say here? This is important to know when you focused on the evaluating of the structure. You can say that, okay, this is a simplified method like this, and I reduce the cross section only 10%, because the average mass loss is around 10%. But sometimes, as you could see here, there are some points which are more critical, and then you should be careful about that kind of calculation. And carbonation. Carbonation is one of the corrosion process which is completely depend on the amount of the moisture in the structure or relative humidity. If we have no relative humidity here in this case, or if we have fully saturated the structure, the rate of the carbonation penetration in the structure is zero here and here. So we cannot have a carbonation problem when the concrete is dry or when the concrete is fully saturated. Why? Because here, when we don't have a moisture, CO2 cannot dissolve and start to react because there is no moisture. And here, it's CO2 cannot go through the concrete because it's completely saturated. So the reason is different, but the output is good. We don't have any problem. But the worst case for the CO2 is the humidity between 16% to 80%. So in this case, or in this area, we have larger amount of the CO2 penetration to the concrete. And the important effect, the most important effect of CO2 is reducing the alkalinity in the concrete. It's reduced the pH in the concrete. And when we reduce the pH or pH, what's happened for the structure? That layer, that protective layer around the rebar, when we reduce the pH, that layer will removed and will injured. So carbonation, we could say that carbonation make the rebar ready for chloride attack. Because carbonation could remove and could reduce the alkalinity in the structure. When the alkalinity is reduced, then the protective layer is disappear, and when protective layer is disappear, then chloride could react with the in the rebar. So if you want to see the reaction of the carbonation, you could see that the CO2 produced a lot of acid here and make the concrete more acidic, so reduce the alkalinity, and then it's not good for us. And then it's produced the carbonate, and this carbonate react with the calcium and produce CaCO3. And you should know that the increasing the pH in the structures, increasing or having the good alkaline situation in the structure is good because it's protect the rebar, and then we have a protective layer around the rebar. Yeah. And there is another factor here. We could see that this carbonation rate. If you are going to find the CO2 penetrate depth in the structures, then we have this formula. And in this formula, K is the constant and T is the time. Then by this, we could find the depth of the carbonation penetration. For example, if we have a case that the carbonation depth, for example, is if it's 1 millimeters, I mean the X is 1 millimeter after 1 year, by this formula we could say that after, for example, 3 years, then the carbonation depth, or after 9 years, the carbonation depth is 3 millimeters. After 25 years, the carbonation depth is 5 millimeters. After 100 years, the carbonation depth is 10 millimeters. So, by this formula, if we could find the K, the constant factor, then we could predict the carbonation depth in future. And also, good to know that the carbonation is depend on the porosity, composition of the concrete, moisture content, as I said, and depth cover and time. So if you have enough depth cover, or if you have, less humidity in the structure or saturated the structure, then we don't have any problems. For example, for concrete under the water, probably we don't have any problem for carbonation. So the question is how we could measure the carbonation. So usually when we speak about the sound concrete and carbonated concrete, the sound concrete, the pH is between 30 or 40, or maybe 12 or 40. But for the carbonated concrete, it's reduced to 8 to 9. So here we have a good passive film, but here the passive film is breakdown. And then the corrosion could start when the pH is reduced. But here the corrosion rate is very, very slow. And then we should use the phenolphthalein to find the carbonation in the structures. How should we use that? We cut the cover, or specifically cut the cross section, and add this, spray it on the surface. And the surface, when we have a red, when we have a pink surface, here is not carbonated, but in the other part is carbonated concrete. So we could understand that there is a carbon here, but no carbonation here. And there is a small movie, maybe you can see. is what happened. And then you can see that they add definite theta line in the system. But why we don't have a... Anyway. And there is another one, maybe it's good to see. Yeah, this one is the normal corrosion, colorite corrosion. But I don't have sound, I don't know why. Maybe from here. But anyway, you can see that this movie show how to anodic and cathodic reaction start in the river. First remove the passive layer. Go through the concrete and reach river. That is a pity we don't have a voice on that, but anyway. So deoxide iron react with the hydroxide and produce dust, and dust start to increase the volume, and then we have a crack in the structure. And then you can see in the surface when it's too late. Yeah. So let's come back to carbonation. And then the control, how to control the carbonation. Control the carbonation, it suggests to use the low water cement ratio to reduce the permeability. Always, it's the best option. And the low relative humidity, if it's possible, it depends. And also increase the cover of the concrete and make it difficult for the carbonation to penetrate to the concrete. And here is just good to know that when we speak about the cover, this is the service life age of the structure. If the cover is 120 millimeters, you could see the probability of the corrosion after, for example, 120 years is less than 6 or 7%. But for 90 millimeters is around 30, and for 70 millimeters around 70%. So you could see that the cover, they have to play an important role to avoid the corrosion, because before starting the corrosion, chloride and carbonation should go through the structure. And the final things I could show you that usually we have the combination of the different deterioration process, abrasion and chemical attack, reinforcement corrosion, freeze and thaw problems. And this area, because you could see this is the tidal zone, this area is more worst part of the bridge, because usually the water just go down and increase, and it's getting wet and dry, and sometimes the water splash and then remove the cover. So always this area is most dangerous place, and the majority of the problem of the concrete destruction bridges in this area. Just good to know that the tidal zone is one of the most critical zone in the structures. Yeah, this is the summary of the problems in the deterioration mechanism in the structure, concrete structure. And in the last hour we go through the structural effect. So probably you need some minutes rest, and then after that we go to the structural effect. So we notice that different mechanisms influence on the durability of the structure. But the question is how this mechanism influence and affect on the capacity of the structure. I mean the property, structural properties of the damaged structures. So we are going to focus on the structural effect of concrete deterioration. And start with the corrosion. We know that when we have a corrosion, the corrosion, as we see in the previous movie, start to increase the volume, reduce the concrete cross section, and then damage the concrete structures. So if we are going to list it, the first one is reduce the concrete strength. There are some suggestions that for damaged and corroded structure, we can reduce by using some empirical formula and calculate the reduced compressive strength. And also we have some crack, as you can see in these pictures, because of the increasing volume, spalling here, and changing the elastic models, and also rebar strengths, because we have a localized corrosion, and then the yielding capacity and everything and ductility will change, and the bond slip between the rebar and concrete also will change. So if you want to, as a person, if you want to simulate and predict the behavior of corroded structure, then you have to consider all of these effects. And you should see that, and you should know that it's not easy, because we don't know how accurately, for example, the compressive strength will reduce, the tensile strength of the rebar will reduce. We have some suggested formula, but the combination of several assumptions of formula could be could lead us to the not accurate result. But then we have to be very careful when we use the simulation. And here it showed that the tensile test of the rebar, and you could see the elongation and the also applying load. We have a rebar and start applying load until it's going to be break. So here we don't have any corrosion, and you could see the elongation is around 24 millimeters. But here when we have a 75% cross section loose, then the elongation is around 2 millimeters. And then this, and also you could see that the amount of the load here is 5 kilonewton, and here is more than 20 kilonewton. So if you have a cross section loose in the rebar, everything will change. Then you should reconsider your calculation to find the new capacity of the structures. There is a bond between the reinforcement and concrete, and this bond has the specific strengths due to the quality of the concrete. So if we start to corroded rebar here, it's a summary of several studies, and all of them show that by increasing the corrosion, then the bond start to reduce. So if we have around 8% corrosion based on this study, then the bond reduced from, for example, 25 to, or maybe 15 to around 2 or 3. So this is important to know that bond slip also influenced by corrosion. And here also they suggested some formula. And you should know that in the code, in the Eurocode, they suggested us some specific graph and formula to consider different size of effect of the corrosion in the bond slip behavior. Yeah. And we also discussed about the localized corrosion, pitting corrosion. Localized corrosion, this data is gathered to show the effect of the average cross-section loss, we have several beams and the slab which is corroded, and we consider as an average cross-section loss and see the how capacity is reduced. You could see that the result is substantially scattered, so it's not just follow the line, and we cannot say that this line is correct because the result is in wide range and we cannot make a good conclusion. If I increase the cross-section loss, how many percentage it will reduce? But for some of the cases we have data for maximum cross-section loss or localized cross-section loss, and when we consider the localized cross-section loss, then you can see that the result, the capacity is completely in good direction and you can predict what's happened for that. So then here, what could we learn from this slide? It means that the average cross-section loss, which we had as assumption to calculation, sometimes couldn't give us the correct data. But maximum cross-section loss or localized cross-section loss is, if you consider in your calculation, is more accurate. So this is important to show the effect of localized corrosion. And the other things about localized corrosion, you should think about this. Assume that we have a beam, this beam, and in this beam we have two rebar. And in both rebar, we have localized corrosion here, the cross-section loss due to the corrosion. And if I want to calculate the capacity of this cross-section, I mean, the question is, if I want to calculate the capacity of this cross-section, then I can say that, okay, the cross-section loss reduced, for example, 60% for the rebar. But the point is, if this two localized corrosion is not in a direct line, and one of them be in the, for example, some centimeters back, the second pit, is there any influence of this pit on that or not? If you are looking from above, if they are in the, I'm looking from the above, it's a plane view. So if the pitting are in the same line, then probably it's easy to calculate the cross section. But if it's not in the same line, is there any effect on that or not? Because there would be a crack between these two. So then I usually consider this cross section and calculate this cross section capacity. But there is a pit out of the cross-section, maybe influence on that. So this is another way of show that if I have some pit here and the other is here, is there any interaction between these? So because of that, and this is only just considering the localized corrosion. Then we have changing in the bond sleeve, we have changing in the rebar yield strength, changing the ductility of the rebar, concrete compressive strength, tensile strength. So everything in the structure will change. And then we have to consider all of them. And you could see just for one cross-section loss, how important could be considering the different scenario in our calculation. So this is the sample of this case I discussed. This is the simulation, and the black point here are localized corrosion. You can see if you have one pit here and one pit here, then there is a crack between these two. This brown line is the crack. And if I have one pit here and one pit here, there is a crack between them. But if two pits are far from each other, then they have separate crack. They do not interfere or interact on each other. So I just selected to show you that usually to evaluate the capacity of damage structure, we use the simulation. And I just want to say that in the simulation, it's not easy to just simplify everything. Then you have to be very accurate if you are going to focus on a small part. But if you are going to focus on the whole structure, then it's impossible to be such accurate. Because it takes lots of time and energy to simulate, for example, the whole bridge in 3D and then in different point consider different problems. So usually we focused on the small part, the critical part of the structures, and find the capacity for that. Yeah, let's continue. And if we are going to see the effect of the frost damage or freeze tower problems, because it's the cyclic problem, then we have an expansion, and due to the expansion we have crack opening. It's also influenced on the change in the elastic modulus, concrete strength, and bond behavior. Here we can see that the effect of number of the freeze tau cycle, as I said, for example, in the morning there is a sun and there is no freeze in the concrete and frost in the concrete. Then at night it's colder, and then this cycle will repeat, or maybe in different seasons it's repeat, or different days it's repeat. So then here we have a number of cycle, and here we have a relative dynamic modulus of elasticity. So according to the standard, if we reduce this one to 80%, then we could say that this concrete defined as a damaged concrete. And in this data show us only after 20 cycle, the relative dynamic module will reduce to 80%. Only 20 cycle. So this is important. This is very important. Also consider the effect, structural effect, on the structural properties of the structure. And here also again we have the number of the cyclic freeze and thaw and the compressive strength. And again you could see that it's after 50 cycle is reduced from 30 to 20. So also the compressive strength will reduce, and tensile strength also is the same, from 4 it's reduced to 3. And in this graph we could see that the effect of the compressive strength and tensile strength, and there is a almost linear relation between them. So we could say that if in the previous slide the compressive strength is reduced like this, also the tensile strength also reduced with the same rate. So the summary is freeze and thaw influenced a lot on the bond slip and the compressive tensile strength and dynamic modulus. And here is the bond effect of the freeze and thaw on the bond strength. So this is just gathered from some paper, so it's not necessary to know all detail of this. I just want to feel how influence these problems on the structural properties. And you could see here that bond slip, when we have a different level of the cycles, will reduce a lot. And also here, freeze and thaw and bond strength will reduce. So ASR, the problem, the big problem when we speak about the ASR, usually when we are going to simulate the ASR, we should consider the expansion. And the point is, In ASR, the expansion in different direction is different. So this is the anisotropic behavior. So we cannot say that, okay, this expand like this. In one direction is expand faster, in one direction is different. So it's make it very difficult to simulate the ASR. So then we could say that this anisotropic behavior of ASR make it very difficult. And because of that, there are several research on that right now, and in Norway even, and other countries, that focusing on how to simplify, simulate ASR, which is correct, which is not too simplified and not accurate. So, and also its influence on the Young modulus, concrete strengths, and network crack also is the one of the sign of these problems. So, anisotropic strength properties in different direction, then we have an anisotropic cracking and also anisotropic expansion. And even this expansion here, it's a bit has a discussion that this expansion for different casting direction of the concrete is different. If the casting is in this direction or that direction, it's influence on the expansion. So you can see that the sample with expansion along the casting direction, the expansion is a lot, but expansion perpendicular to the casting direction is lower. So all of this anisotropic behavior make the ASR problems, the simulation and prediction of the ASR problem, very difficult. And here's some data show that the effect of the expansion due to the ASR on tensile strength and Young modulus. Here you can see Young modulus and here you can see tensile strength. And as a general conclusion, increasing the expansion reduced both tensile strength and Young modulus of the damaged structures. And the next slide is about the ASR and compressive strengths. You could see probably based on the different case presented here, sometimes even ASR leads to increasing the compressive strengths. And it's make it, we cannot say any, make any clear conclusion here. So we could say that the compressive strength is not good indicator of initiation or progress of ASR. Particularly in the first age, if you focused here, you could see it's completely different in different directions. Sometimes it's reduced, sometimes it's increased. So we cannot just consider the compressive strength, okay, the compressive strength reduced, then probably we have some problem. It's not good indicator, it's not clear. So, and we could say that the compressive strength is less affected by ASR if you compare it with the Young modulus of tensile strength. Yeah. And let's have a quick review of type of the crack, at least shape of the crack. So we have two different type of the crack. A structure under curing and normal structure. So we have these two cracks is very important cracks. We have different type of the crack I will show you. But the thermal crack and external loading and the stress crack are very important. So the thermal crack, we have a different thermal crack. It could be external or internal. Internal means that if we made a structure, for example, a wall, in the middle of that we have high temperature, and in the around the, of that we have a lower temperature because in contact with the air. So the shape of the distribution of the temperature is like this. Here is colder and the middle is warmer, and this gradient temperature leads to have an internal crack in the structures. And the other times we have already made a structure which is cold, and finished, and then, for example, foundation, and we are going to add another structure and this joint between the old concrete and the new concrete. So this also create a thermal crack between these two and create the crack in direction of that. And you could see that this type of the crack here, because we have old structure and new structure, and it work as a restraint and produce the crack on the structures. So this is also one of the damage could appear in the structures. But how to avoid this and how to control this is another issue and needs more time to discuss about this. So in the concrete structure, if we want to very simplified show the type of the crack, it's not 100% accurate, but it's help you to understand different type of the crack. So crack due to the increased load on the slab is usually like this. And if you remember, when we are going to distribute and we are going to distribute load on the slab in different column, we use the same shape and said that, okay, this beam suffered, this beam carry out the load from this is part of the slab, this is from this. So this shape is increased load. When we increase the load on the slab, this type of the crack we have. So if you see that we have such a crack, then probably you will guess that this is because of the increasing in the or overloading the structure. And sometimes we have a crack due to the shrinkage, and it's like this, and result of the sulfate, and then we have this kind of crack, and also we have some spalling and the scaling of the surface. And aggregate, if you have an active aggregate around the aggregate due to the alkaline, we have such a small crack. And we have the crack around the rebar, then you could see that, say that, okay, the rebar is corroded because crack follow the rebar. And sometimes this map crack also is due to the alkali reactions. So if you see the map crack quickly, don't say that this is the corrosion. But if there is no potential of the corrosion and you have a map crack, then you should think about the ASR. And you can understand the amount of, there are some tests, half cell potential and different type of the test. You could find amount of the chloride inside the concrete and under the rebar. And if it's not reached the limitation, then you could say, okay, it's not corroded. It's another type of the crack. And in the structure also, when we have a structure beam like this and here have a support, then we have a shear crack near the support. And this is due to the high amount of the shear load here. And shear load is in this direction. It's in vertical direction. And the maximum shear load is on support. If you draw the shear graph, it's something like this. So the maximum shear is on support, and it's a diagonal crack near the support. And this is also kind of shear cracking near the support. You could see that some of them are diagonal. But the bending crack is in the middle of the beam, and it's vertical almost. And when you go a bit farther, it's try to come in direction of the center. So this, the crack in the bend in the middle and bottom of the beam is the bending crack. Why is the reason of the bending crack? Huge amount of the moment, bending moment, or huge amount of the load, and the beam is like this and try to be like this, and then we have such a crack in the middle. And then we have sometimes this kind of the crack, which show that we do not have enough cover, and then crack follow the rebar, and then we understand, okay, there's a problem. And if you have a crack follow the reinforcement, as we already discussed, it could be due to the corrosion. And this is the compression failure. It's completely overloaded, and the failure happens. It's like a very big crack. And I remember I saw in one of the pictures from one of the bridges in Norway, there was that kind of the failure. But it was on the support, and it was a very huge shear crack. And bridge. So as a summary, we understand that we have a different type of the deterioration mechanism, and also we're getting familiar with the effect of that or those deterioration on the structures. So we could divide it in four different group. One of the material properties, which could influence on the concrete properties and the steel properties. Concrete compressive strength, steel yield strength, ductility of the rebar. So it's influence on the material properties. And the other is geometry, reduce the cross-section of the rebar, reduce the concrete cover, deflection, increase the deflection, and sometimes we have a settlement in the foundation. And also we could have a crack, different size, location, type of the crack due to the different problems. And at the end, we have a problem for bond slip between the reinforcement and concrete. So both bond strength and bond behavior will influence bond, but different type of the crack. So thank you very much. If you have a question, you could ask. We have some minutes to answer your questions if you have. Good luck.